Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Ken Miller, managing editor for Las Vegas Weekly. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
So let us start with Traitor, which is a movie that actually opened on Wednesday, starring Don Cheadle as a – it's a kind of hard to describe this movie without getting into spoiler territory.
Absolutely. It's I think we're going to have to give away certain plot points to really discuss this.
So minor spoilers may follow. And I guess I'll say Don Cheadle is a mysterious guy in this movie. He appears to be part of a terrorist organization. He's a devout Muslim who's born in the Sudan and but raised mostly in America after the death of his father in a terrorist bombing. And he's now dealing weapons to terrorists. And we see him – we first see him in I think it's Yemen where he's selling weapons to these Muslim terrorists. And so we follow him as he sort of moves up in this terrorist organization. And then at the same time, we see Guy Pearce and Neil McDonough who play FBI agents who are sort of on the trail of this guy and hoping to use him to lead to this larger organization that is planning some sort of big bombing or event of some sort that's going to be going on U.S. soil. So I think that's a fairly spoiler-free summary of what's going on here.
Very well detailed, too.
Thank you. So it is a little hard, I guess, to critique the movie without getting to spoilers. But I think to me what I liked at first was the fact that you see the Don Cheadle character who is this – again, he's a devout Muslim and you know, he's very – serious and sort of respectable, and he's involved in this terrorist organization, and yet this is a movie that takes him seriously, his ideas and his values, and I liked that.
Correct.
About it.
Yeah, I have to give Don Cheadle props because, I mean, say what you will about the Ocean's movies, the guy really does put passion into the projects that he, you know, he wants to handle. I mean, Hotel Rwanda was a great example, but this is obviously something that I think it was very close to him, obviously something he wanted to be involved with. But at the same time, I have to kind of dock him a few points because it's a semi-entertaining movie, but I felt it was kind of tripping over itself at times. And I felt that the pacing could have been a lot better. There were certain times when the movie kind of almost slows to a crawl. And in a movie like this, in a story like this, you want to kind of keep the audience, you know, audience's attention at all times.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it's, you know, in terms of trying to give another side of the terrorist situation that we're in right now, you know, he has to be applauded for the effort.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And we should mention, obviously, Cheadle was a producer on this as well as a star. And Jeffrey Nachmanoff, I think is how you pronounce it, is the writer and director behind this. And he wrote The Day After Tomorrow, which was a slightly less sophisticated film.
One of my wife's favorite movies. I just need to give that a shout out for her.
You know, I actually thought it was not that bad. In the sort of Roland Emmerich oeuvre, The Day After Tomorrow, not the worst one he's ever done. But yeah, I agree. The thing about this movie is that there is that sort of effort towards sophistication, you know, that effort towards taking things seriously, which is very appreciated. But at the same time, it's a very almost like pulpy sort of airport novel kind of thriller.
Yeah.
And that's definitely in tension with the seriousness and sort of undermines it, I think, after a while when you don't know really are they just trying to give you this suspense, which, as you say, the pacing kind of is a little slow and is a little – and to me, again, it's hard to get into this without spoilers, but because we sort of figure out early on what's really going on with the Don Cheadle character and, you know, what his goal really is, then – it's hard to feel the suspense for the FBI characters who don't know what's going on and are trying to figure out what's going on.
Right.
And are sort of racing against time. But we know that what they're racing against is not necessarily what they think they're racing against. And I think it loses a lot of the tension in the story because of that.
It's almost like the filmmakers really couldn't kind of make up their minds what type of movie they were making. I mean, you get the sense at the beginning that it's going to be a much more serious take on what's going on. But then midway, it takes on this different type of tone that – to me, was very distracting, and parts of it were just out and out ludicrous. I mean, and I'm referring to some of the spoilers, of course.
But, yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those movies that I think if you go into it with the least amount of expectation, you're bound to appreciate it more than you would if you go into it reading all these, you know, these hyperbolic reviews about a nail biter, edge of your seat thriller, that sort of thing.
Right, right.
It's, I mean, if you're familiar with Don Cheadle's work, I mean, I think you'll understand what you're getting yourself into. But it's not ultimately a very successful attempt to communicate what I think Cheadle wanted to do.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think in contrast to a lot of other movies that have tried to take on issues about terrorism and the war in Iraq, which of course is never mentioned, is obviously part of the thematic structure here. Compared to other movies that have tried to take that on, I think this is more entertaining, possibly more successful. A movie like The Kingdom, which got a lot of bad reviews that came out last year, the Peter Berg movie with Jamie Foxx, I thought was actually pretty good because it to me did a lot of what this movie is trying to do, which it was exciting, it was suspenseful, it was like your basic thriller, and it happened to include all that terrorism stuff, but it only took it as seriously as it needed to get the story across. And here it seems like they're trying to take it more seriously than that. You know, have their cake and eat it too, in a way. And
I almost kind of wish that Peter Berg would have directed this, because as much as I'm not a huge fan of his style, I think it would have worked better in this film than McMahonoff.
Nachmanoff, I think. Nachmanoff. Well, whatever. He'll never listen. We'll continue mangling his name.
Of course. But I think that, again, I mean, going with a certain tone and sticking with that tone, I think would have benefited this screenplay a lot more.
Yeah.
But it's just it ends up being very ultimately confusing and, without giving any spoilers away, very derivative of other recent thrillers that have come out.
Yes.
Very derivative.
Yes.
I mean, I found myself almost distracted at times by the fact that it was so similar.
Yeah, there is definitely a very a twist sort of later in the movie that's very similar to another movie, and actually to a comic book series that came out a few years ago that probably no one is familiar with, but had a very similar twist.
It's too bad we can't actually refer to these works. But
yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's an audience member out there. If you go to any number of movies during the year, if you're at all familiar with the landscape of movies recently, you'll know exactly what we're talking about when you start watching it.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
But overall, I mean, I did find it I found it worth my while. I didn't regret the fact that I saw it. I mean, I wouldn't rave about it to other people, but I would recommend that if you're a Cheadle fan, check it out.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think it's more worth a rental, you know. There's still so many earlier summer blockbusters that are out right now. We're getting into that late summer period where there's sort of a dumping ground for movies that studios, you know, don't know what to do with or don't really have a whole lot of confidence in. And this is better than you would expect from that time, but I think it's something that you could wait on if necessary. So I guess we'll continue doing. I'm not sure if we every week. I wonder if we should continue doing star ratings on this podcast. But I will say I gave this a 2.5 star rating out of 5 in my review in the weekly. I don't know if you want to chime in with a rating as well.
I'd probably give this 7 out of 10 Cheadles.
7 out of 10. All right. Well, that's a pretty positive response. I think
only because I have great respect for what he tries to do in his movies, and you know, otherwise it probably would have been a 6.
Right. Well, I agree. He is a respectable, sometimes too respectable,
right.
actor.
Right.
So okay, moving on to a smaller film, although with a lot of big names in it as well, Elegy, which is opening over at the Village Square, starring Ben Kingsley and Penelope Cruz, Dennis Hopper. Based on a Philip Roth novel from 2001. And this is a sort of – I thought a sort of dour, sort of grim drama with Kingsley. He plays a college professor who's sort of getting on in his years and is, I guess, a little bit lonely. You know, he's a perpetual – he advertises the fact that he wants to be perpetually single and he doesn't want to be tied down. But of course, in his heart, you know, he's not. He's longing for companionship. And
aren't we all?
Well, maybe. I don't know if that's really a subject that's beyond the scope of this podcast. But he meets Penelope Cruz, who plays a former or just former student of his. She finishes the class and then they have this party and they fall in love. And he realizes that he really wants more out of her and out of life. And then things, of course, don't go as planned. And it's very somber.
I would go so far as to say very heavy-handed, not very subtle at all.
No.
I felt myself kind of wanting to turn it off at times and just kind of, you know, take a break.
Yeah.
Because it really was laying it on pretty thick.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does.
And I'm you know, obviously the majority of the blame has to go to, you know, I think the screenplay. I think that the screenplay tends to be very – you know, has to let us know what's going on at all times in case we can't figure
it out. Right. It's very on the nose, the dialogue, I think.
And parts of it are just, I mean, for me, completely unrealistic. I mean, to have a guy.
You didn't buy Ben Kingsley and Penelope Cruz falling in love?
Let's just assume that could ever happen. But even barring that, you know, the fact that this man who has reveled in the hedonist lifestyle his whole lifetime, you know, tells her how many women he's had, which is probably more than he can possibly count. And then she reveals that she's had 5. And he's immediately so jealous. He needs to know about every single, you know, that to me just completely, I almost lost interest at that point because that was just not at all believable for me.
It is weird. I mean, I think they're trying to convey the fact that this is a different sort of relationship for him than the previous ones that he's had, that he becomes so all consumed with this one as opposed to all these other women that he slept with that have meant nothing to him. But I don't think they effectively convey why that is or what it is about this person that makes her so special.
The only one you ever really meet from the past is
Patricia Clarkson.
Patricia Clarkson, yes, who has been sleeping with him. This is another one for me that was stretched the believability meter. But she's been sleeping with him for 30 years.
Right.
I think it's 30 years.
Something. A long time.
And she realizes what this man's all about. I mean, he's sleeping with her for 30 years. He was sleeping with her when he was married. And then all of a sudden to find a tampon in his bathroom and she completely loses it.
Right.
You know, and that – again, I mean – completely ridiculous, in my opinion.
Right.
But, I mean, the only other person that we meet that he slept with was Patricia Clarkson. We don't get a sense of who the other women were.
No.
Maybe that's not necessary. But just to bring in, you know, the student du jour and then all of a sudden decide that this is the one, there wasn't enough reason for it, in my opinion. There wasn't enough buildup to why this was the one. It just seemed to happen organically to fit the plot.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It does seem very, very insular. You know, there's not a whole lot of scope of these people's lives outside. Just very this sort of oppressive tone that everything that happens has to be so serious and so meaningful.
And take place in almost slow motion.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this director, here's another director's name who I can mangle, is a Spanish director named Isabel Quachet or Quache, something like
this is,
that.
This is why I'm glad you're the host. Yeah. You just pronounce these names, not me.
And her last movie, which I really disliked, was a movie called The Secret Life of Words with Tim Robbins and Sarah Pauly, and had a similar tone where everything was so hushed and serious and everything that every character did was infused with this sort of extra super meaning to it. And this, I think, actually, strangely enough, has a lighter touch, which gives you a sense of what that other movie was like. And I did think – I mean, Ben Kingsley, Penelope Cruz, Dennis Hopper, they're all good actors here, and they're all sort of doing their best with the material.
Exactly, yeah.
So in that sense, it wasn't awful.
In terms of Ben Kingsley's recent films, I mean, this is you know, right at the top as far as how far he stretches himself acting-wise.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, I mean, he's got a lot to point to in the last few years, but I felt that overall, you know, he was compelling enough to keep watching the movie. I mean, I think Ben Kingsley, when he's on his game, is about as compelling as any actor out there.
Yeah, and he's been kind of over the top in a lot of recent roles, and he's very restrained here.
Exactly, very restrained. And, you know, but again, a lot of the plot just seems to be so convenient. Things happen, you know, almost on cue. And it just, you know, a lot of it just rings completely hollow with
me.
I've seen a lot of relationship movies. I've seen a lot of movies about the older man and the younger woman.
Yeah.
It seems like we never have the reversal, does it?
No, that is true.
But, I mean, this to me was kind of almost a carbon copy of those and a very slow-paced one at that.
So
I really can't strongly recommend this unless, you know, you're a big fan of Penelope Cruz's breasts. But who isn't? but even then, it's nowhere near what I would describe as erotic.
Right. No, that I think I agree. And there are some sort of tender or meant to be tender love scenes that come off as very austere and not particularly sexy, and especially compared to like
almost like you're looking at a painting.
Yeah, which is and I mean, in a way, maybe part of what the plot is. Early in the movie, Ben Kingsley's character shows Penelope Cruz a painting in a book that he feels that she resembles, and so that may be part of what they're going for here. But for a movie about a hedonist, again, it's very not sexy. And compared to like Vicky Cristina Barcelona, the Woody Allen movie with Penelope Cruz that came out a few weeks ago, which is another – well, a movie made by a sort of dirty old man perhaps. And she's much sexier and much more sensual in that movie, although she does not go topless. So, but no, I agree that unless you're
– Who would have thought that Woody Allen would have more restraint than –
Yeah, it's strangely. But yeah, I think if you're maybe a big fan of depressing movies or of any of these actors, it might be worth a rental. But
one final note, there's a for me the best scene of the movie is when Ben Kingsley is describing to a class how if you read War and Peace 10 years from now, it will be a different book because you're a different person. I found that notion very interesting.
Right.
But in this case, watching this movie 10 years from now, I think I'll still find it dour.
No.
Very slow paced, good acting, about the same as we're talking about.
Even when you're involved in your affair with a younger woman.
we'll cross that bridge when we come to
it. All right. So my assessment was the same for this, with about 2.5 stars, kind of right in the middle on this film. I don't know. You seem a little less generous.
I would actually go so far as to say 4 Kingsleys out of 10.
Ooh. All right. So probably
– 4 Sir Bens.
Not as good as we hoped. And then another movie opening again exclusively over the Village Square that I haven't seen but that you have is a documentary called America the Beautiful.
Definitely the best film I watched in the last week.
Oh, yeah.
It's start with the bad because I always like to end with the good. But the bad is that the filmmaker Darryl Roberts is obviously very interested in this topic, and he makes it clear at the very beginning that the reason he's doing this documentary is because he was in a relationship with a woman and always kept her at arm's length because he was waiting for someone like her but better, as he describes.
And this is about the beauty industry, this movie, correct?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, yes. Documentary all about beauty and what it means to primarily women. And then he kind of makes this documentary his mission to explain why it is that we're like this as Americans. Why do we pursue beauty at all costs, even at the expense of our lives sometimes? The only ding I would give this documentary is that it has a very scattershot approach, and that is that he's trying to cover absolutely everything in an hour and a half. And there is just so much information in this that you can't possibly take time to savor any of it. It just happens bang, 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 and he's on to the next one. And in the process, unfortunately, he leaves a lot of very compelling aspects of the documentary kind of just hanging.
Mm-hmm.
The most fascinating of which, and it sounds simple when you think about it, but I never thought about this before, is that the beauty industry could be requiring models to be thin, not because of any kind of prerequisite standard that someone just made up, but because they're trying to save money on fabric. And that is to say that if a designer makes a bunch of size 4s and loses money, they lose less money than if they make a bunch of size 10s and lose money.
Right, right.
So this is why our models are required to be as thin as they are. Fascinating. And yet it's mentioned and then
dropped.
We just move on.
It seems like this would be a very broad topic to sort of tackle comprehensively
immensely
in one movie.
Immensely broad. And it's not that he doesn't try to spend time on certain things. One common theme throughout the film is Garen Taylor, who actually made headlines a little while ago. She's on the Today Show, matter of fact. She started when she was 12, and she became an overnight sensation. I mean, she was booked by almost every show in L.A. And, as she got older, she got a little more kind of, uppity and haughty because of the success. They had to pull her out of school. Her mom was homeschooling her. There were all sorts of problems with her teachers. And anyway, the end result of it all is that, at 15 years old, she's told she's obese.
Right.
Even though she's basically the same size as she was at 12, but she's older now and, a little more developed in the face, a little more fuller in the face and whatnot, and starting to mature.
As normally happens with people as people grow up, yes.
And it's just, it's very depressing. But at the same, at the same time, anyone who's remotely familiar with the modeling industry won't really be surprised at all because it's brutal. It's a brutal industry that drives, people to anorexia and drugs.
Sure.
And so, I think it's very eye-opening. I think a lot of people should take their kids to see it.
Oh. And does he get back with the girlfriend that he dumped at the end of the movie?
No, unfortunately. She's married now.
Ah, what a shame.
But Daryl does – he tries his best to kind of be self-effacing. He finds a website called beautifulpeople.net, which is just – you know, just makes me want to vomit thinking about it. But it's basically a site where a bunch of beautiful people get on the same site so they can tell each other how beautiful they are.
Right.
And he tries to get on this site sending a photo of himself in a well-written profile. Well, Daryl Roberts is a very kind of overweight man, bald.
Yeah, not beautiful.
Not by any stretch of the imagination, but the people who run the site tell him, oh, well, we've had people who write beautiful write-ups get on this.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he enlists himself on this and in a few days gets rejected. And then they show him looking at himself in the mirror like he's like, what's wrong with me?
So he gets his own little comeuppance there.
Exactly.
That he manufactures for himself.
That's the feeling that I got, exactly. But still, I mean, at the end of it all, you realize that, you know, it's a well-intentioned documentary. It's meant to make you really think and to kind of stop and say, is this the path I really want to be on? Should I just be happy with who I am?
So. Right. No, that sounds good. So that's one to check out this week over at the Village Square. And quickly, another exclusive Village Square movie that I want to mention is which neither of us have seen, but is one that I'm hoping to see this week or next week. Hopefully it'll play for longer than a week, is Trans-Siberian, which is the new movie from Brad Anderson, who directed The Machinist, Session 9, Happy Accidents, a lot of cool sort of under-the-radar movies. But he's a very good, I think, effective sort of genre director. And this is a movie that actually also stars Ben Kingsley as well. as Woody Harrelson and Emily Mortimer, I believe, as a couple, and they're on the Trans-Siberian Express, which is the famous train that goes from Russia all the way to China. And there's a murder or some abduction or some sort of mysterious circumstances going on this train. And it's been described as very Hitchcockian, and it just sounds like something – again, a cool sort of well-made genre exercise, which is what Anderson has done in the past. So I'm definitely hoping to see that.
Yeah, ironically, the one movie of the week I wish I would have seen.
Right.
Brett Anderson is, I think, an up-and-comer big time.
Oh, yeah.
Session 9 is probably my favorite horror film of all time.
Wow.
And I mean, Brett Anderson is able to, he has shown already, he's able to do a lot with very little.
Yeah.
And, he has a very strong command of the film language, and I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing this.
Yes.
I've heard, allusions to Hitchcock are being thrown around,
right.
but you know, it's not to say that's a bad thing, but
oh, I think it's a good thing.
Somebody tells me that Anderson puts his own spin on this, so that it's much more him than Hitchcock.
Yeah, I hope so, and I think it's a shame he's always had trouble, I think, coming up with financing and getting resources together to make movies. So hopefully something will take off for him beyond his sort of mid-level point where he's been at.
Speaking of Ben Kingsley, I often wonder if he forgets what set he's
on. He is quite busy.
The Love Guru, the Wackiness, yes. Elegy, this. So.
And which accent? He plays a Russian cop in this movie, I believe. So it's that sort of accent of the week, whichever one he's stuck on. And then there's a bunch of movies that we can't talk about at all, not because we wanted to see them and it didn't work out, but because they're being kept from critics. And just quickly to mention, this is the sort of example of the season that we're in, this sort of late summer dumping ground. We have Babylon AD, the sci-fi movie starring Vin Diesel, Disaster Movie, which is the latest alleged spoof of popular blockbusters from the makers of Meet the Spartans and Date Movie and Epic Movie, as well as the generically titled College, which is a comedy that involves people at college. So We can say, having not seen these movies, these are probably the ones to avoid this week, simply because the studio obviously doesn't have any sort of confidence in them, and this is what they're trying to foist on audiences.
I'm almost starting to think that I should change my rating system to give an automatic star just for having the courage to screen your movie for critics.
Right, exactly. At least to put it out there and take the risk, but those ones are hoping that audiences won't be paying attention, and I think that's unfortunate.
Let's hope audiences won't be paying, period.
Right. Exactly. And then, again, sort of exemplifying the drought of quality material here, coming up on DVD this coming Tuesday is not a whole lot. I'll briefly mention Then She Found Me, which was Helen Hunt's directorial debut, which she starred in with Bette Midler and Colin Firth and Matthew Broderick. And it played – I want to say it was at Sundance, but it was definitely at a big festival where it was picked up for, you know, in a bidding war of sorts. And it seemed like something that would be poised to be a big success. And it hasn't made a whole lot of money at the box office. And I think that was probably warranted. I'm not a big Helen Hunt fan as an actress or as a director here. This is a very, I think in a way like Elegy, kind of downbeat, unpleasant, alleged romantic comedy with Helen Hunt, and she is a teacher married to Matthew Broderick, and he has an affair, and they get divorced, and then she meets the Colin Firth character, and they fall in love, and
there's been at least one other romantic comedy straight to DVD. It's a Meg Ryan work, where I believe she puts a fat suit on. And I think it's called My Mother's Boyfriend or My Mother's
Sister. Oh, yeah, something like that. You're right.
A lot of comedies lately going straight to
the theater. Right. Well, this actually made it – I mean, this was in theaters in a sort of smaller release than you might have imagined when it was first at festivals and written about a lot. But
I definitely missed that one.
Well, and I think, again, it's probably worth missing, unfortunately. It really comes off sort of like a Lifetime movie. And really, though, the only person in this movie who does anything worthwhile, I think, is Bette Midler, who has not done a whole lot of acting in recent years, but really comes in and hams it up as Helen Hunt's long-lost biological mother and is not in any way in line with the tone of the movie, which is, like I said, kind of is serious-ish and downbeat, and she's just over the top and silly, but always entertaining whenever she shows up, which is not nearly enough in this movie. So, don't rent that. Don't bother with that. Go back and see WALL-E or something. I think that may be the lesson this week. Or check out Trans-Siberian or America the Beautiful, both over at the Village Square. I think that's the lesson. And I think that'll do it for this week. Thank you, Ken Miller, for joining me.
My pleasure.
And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell, and tune in next week.
Josh Bell hates everything!